The Human Podcast features weekly service audio from the Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia. Please visit us at human.org.
Good morning. My name is Mandy Winders, and I'm a member of this congregation. As most of you know, Reverend Dave Dunn has begun his sabbatical, and our guest minister today is Lila Lockridge. Lila is a public health program evaluator and educator with a focus on mental health. In her search for truth and wisdom, Lila has made an educational journey through multiple systems of faith. And we're glad to welcome her back for a second guest sermon during Dave's sabbatical. On behalf of Lila, our Director of Religious Exploration, Lexi Brown, our music director, Alex Peach, and our talented Chalice Choir, my fellow worship associates, and our dedicated technical team that's making today's live stream possible, I'd like to welcome you this morning to the Metro Atlanta North Congregation, Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation, which we lovingly call Human. Human is a liberal faith community with the mission to nurture our spirit, strive for justice, and transform the world. No matter who you are, whom you love, or where you are in your spiritual journey, all are welcome here. We have a few announcements this morning. As always, all ages are welcome in service, and we do have a fidget shelf for the children, I think, back there. To help with our busy hands. In lieu of our typical second hour enrichment offerings this week, we have a few special events going on. At 11 o'clock, the stewardship team would like to invite everyone to the fellowship hall for light food and cake to celebrate the end of our stewardship campaign. And at 11:15, you can join us back in the sanctuary for a final discussion forum about the UUA Article 2 revision before we begin our congressional vote on whether or not to support the proposed changes to the Article 2 of the UUA bylaws. The RE schedule for the next several weeks is in your printed order of worship. And Earth Ministry is announcing the beginning of a series of hikes after second hour classes. We'll meet today on the porch at Human by the tiny library, so right out there. You can grab a quick lunch together and then they'll be off. The hike begins at the National Park site, historically known as Lover's Rock. The address is Allenbrook, 227 South Atlanta Street. It's located a short way past Thousand Hills Coffee on the left, just before the river. The weather's good, the wildflowers are coming out, and the views are especially great before the leaves are full. The hike is going to be led by Gus Haydorn. Future hikes will feature Claudia Rossi or Bruce Langston. Our hikes are for all ages. Fall in love again with the natural world and save your soul. Earth Ministry would also like to remind everyone that native plants are beautiful and critically needed. Chattahoochee Nature Center's Native Plant Sale is this Friday and Saturday, March 29th and 30th. And on a related note, next Saturday, March 31st, is our annual Flower Communion. Please bring a flower or several to exchange during the ceremony celebrating spring and our UU principles. This month's 50-50 recipient is Cats in the Cradle Feline Rescue. Half of today's plate offering, as well as any checks or Givelify donations specifically designated as 50-50 during the month of March, will go to support the work of Cats in the Cradle. And now a quick stewardship announcement.
Hi everyone, Martin Podorowski, and on behalf of the Stewardship Committee, thank you so much for your generosity in supporting Human. Pleased to say that as of today, we have over 75 pledges submitted for this year's stewardship campaign. So give yourselves all a round of applause. So we do have a few members we'll still be following up with this week. And if you're not pledged yet, we still would like to hear from you at the stewardship table. But we will also, as mentioned, be having a celebration right after service, about 11 o'clock right out here. We're going to have some cake and other treats. So please enjoy some treats on behalf of the stewardship committee. Thank you for your generosity.
And now let us light our chalice, if you'll join me in reading the words in the printed order of worship. We light this chalice to kindle the fire of commitment to spread our beloved faith, proclaim the good news that all are worthy and all are welcome, that God is love and none shall be left behind. May we carry this flame to all we encounter, letting our lives shine with its glow.
I believe that religion's purpose is to provide some of the coping skills we need to navigate this life. I believe that you will hear here what you were meant to hear. I hope you feel free to receive what resonates with you today and leave the rest. I believe in the first principle of Unitarian Universalism, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. If you have ever flown, most airlines invite you to purchase your ticket at different price points. While this is marketed as customer choice, seat comfort, leg room, and early boarding, what is also being sold is your perceived social class. Those who are unable or unwilling to pay a higher price receive no perks and barely any eye contact from the onboarding agent. If you are last to board, you are received like the closing credits in a sad movie. And those who can pay more receive an artificial boost to the ego. By separating passenger boarding by price point, the airlines have rigged a psychological obstacle course for us to navigate. United Airlines has 6 boarding tiers, American Airlines has 8, and Delta has 10. This practice tends to induce self-consciousness and anxiety about how one is being perceived by fellow travelers. We may feel that we are being graded in reference to those around us. Airlines subject us to hierarchies to maximize profit, and this idea has no regard for our shared humanity. As a money-making entity, this practice is focused on dividing us and separating us from our money. Many people feel compelled to purchase a more expensive ticket to avoid being left in the lowest class. Businesses are playing with us, y'all, for a dollar. They are trifling with our holy self-concept to make a profit. Now, I can hear y'all thinking, but this is how business works in America. Businesses are willing to make money by nearly any means. This is how society works. After the airline manipulates us and pulls the extra ducats from our pockets, we are still being carried collectively, safely, and whole in body to our destination. Not in mind, but in body. If we travel, though, unconscious of this game and its effects, we can become unwitting agents of divisive, hierarchical thinking. This thinking infects our daily interactions, in which we have learned to quietly assess people's value based on random physical or biological attributes or by vocation. And then we put ourselves in a rank or pecking order above or below them. If we place ourselves above them, we feel a bit better. If we place ourselves below them, we may feel a bit worse. And this may happen unconsciously several times a day. I want to challenge you to become conscious of this activity. I encourage you to short-circuit the effects of this system by engaging the first principle the next time you fly. No matter which boarding tier you're in, I encourage you to affirm to yourself, I believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person here. And if you want to go further, if you want to be gangster, you can use your flight as an opportunity to strengthen your worthiness muscles. Fly basic economy. Take the bottom rung. Is she suggesting that I leave my Sky Miles on the table? Yes, no perks. I'm suggesting we can use a basic economy flight as a test of our visceral self-worth. I have a friend who does this all the time. Even though he can afford to fly first class whenever he wants, he doesn't because he's thrifty and he knows his worth. This is one test of how you feel about yourself when openly compared with others. Fly in the least expensive boarding class to monitor and bolster your feeling of worth and dignity and to affirm the same for every person around you. That's the perk. So I want you to imagine you're at the gate with your carry-on in hand, and each time a higher boarding class is called without you in it, tune in to how you feel. How does it feel to be left out? If you don't feel good, if you feel less than, that's an indicator that healing is needed and that we need to realign ourselves with the first principle. If you feel good at that point, then congratulations. Your self-esteem is intact. If not, then get ready for your spiritual workout because the next call over the microphone is coming. Do you still see yourself at the gate? Straighten up your spine. You can see yourself straighten your spine and take a deep, full breath and affirm the first principle to bolster you, either silently or aloud. I believe in my inherent worth and dignity. And when they call for the basic economy group, affirm your worthiness again. And as you board, smile at the flight crew and happily make eye contact with each passenger who is willing to meet your proud and equal gaze. We know that there is a different way to manage this, to manage people, to manage processing people. For instance, when you're standing in line at the grocery store, there's a different state of mind in action there. We all take our turn to purchase our groceries without much anxiety and without gauging the status of those around us. In America, though, because there has been so much inequality, there's a good chance that someone in front of you won't have enough money to pay for their food at some point. The Course in Miracles says that that person who seems to be lacking something may be separate from you in body, but is not separate from you in spirit. As your sister or brother, they are you. We are one. And this is echoed in Houston Smith's comparative study of the world's religions. He says, the wisdom traditions of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, and Taoism all speak to the virtues of humility, charity, and veracity. He says, humility is not self-abasement. It is the capacity to regard oneself in the company of others as one, but not more than one. Charity shifts that shoe to the other foot. It is to regard one's neighbor as likewise one, as fully one as oneself. And as my teacher in A Course in Miracles, Clarice Belcher, says, we is one. Singular. Isabel Wilkerson chronicles the mechanisms of caste in her book of the same name. Caste, the origin of our discontent. Filmmaker Ava DuVernay recently adapted the book into a film called Origin, which was in theaters recently. It's a highly impactful and unforgettable film. If you haven't seen it, it is on YouTube and Apple TV now. What was evident from the book and the film is that Jim Crow segregation in America has something in common with German segregation of Jews leading up to the Holocaust, which has something in common with India's caste system. Our airline obstacles seem benign by comparison, but classism and all of the other isms are all forms of caste which share in common the idea that one type of person is better than another. One is above or below. Why do any of us need to feel this? Some say it's just plain hatred. Others have theorized that those who reinforce castes do so because they are dissatisfied with the quality of their lives and are looking for someone to blame. According to A Course in Miracles, we engage in caste systems. The Course calls it separation, because we have a deep-seated insecurity within ourselves, which is called the ego. Because our place in the world feels frightening or unpredictable, we feel we must control it, creating a system that judges one of us to be above or below another is important if one feels insecure, frightened, and lacking control over what happens next. I thought about this and derived a question to prompt constructive thinking. This is a bumper sticker I made, and it says, can I feel better about myself without putting others down? And I have more of them if anyone would like one. The premise for this question is that when I judge or compare myself with another, or stereotype another, or dehumanize another, it's not because there is anything wrong with the other person. It's because by judging them, I believe I elevate myself. The potential effect of this question is that it may prompt thinking about how to fill that scary hole constructively without harming anyone else. And maybe this will help us to pause the next time we judge someone for being different than ourselves. In truth, we are not that different. We are all Homo sapiens here. As humans, we are more alike than different. Anthropologists asserted in the early 20th century that race is made up, for example, as one of the isms. And just last year, race was formally rejected by the Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. We are one. So how else is there a different way to gauge the worth of our lives that creates greater security? I believe we can gauge our worth in joy. We can gauge our worth in how we feel when we help another person. We can gauge our worth in how we feel when we are experiencing what we love. For me, this has been dance. For several years, I danced at least once a week in the salsa community in Atlanta. It's very large, very large. And many venues. I danced cha-cha, bachata, and salsa. I love dancing. This gave me tremendous in-the-moment joy. I would often feel lifted, literally, what do you call it? When you are elevated, lifted up off the ground. When I was dancing, I felt elevated, physically elevated. And I was fully present to the abundant life that came with the combination of each unique partner and song. The flavor of the dance changed depending on these two elements, and I could experience a trifecta of fresh joy with each new pairing. So what is it for you? What is your special joy? What activity or practice brings you fully alive in the world? Whatever that is, judge your life in joy, in giving and caring, in peace and contentment. The other day, I was walking home from the library, and I encountered a man who, in a minivan, that had broken down on the street and was partially blocking traffic. I noticed that the van had a handicapped tag, and I knocked on the window to ask the driver if he was okay. He said that he was shaken, but was trying to request a tow truck. I asked him if he had any medical conditions. He said, "What don't I have?" He didn't know where he was exactly. So I figured out what the nearest address was so that the tow truck driver could find him. And then I told him that he was not alone. I told him I would go home to get a traffic cone to help guide cars around him. Of course, by the time I returned, the police had arrived to direct traffic. And when I slowed down to wave at him, he thanked me deeply and said that it meant a lot that I stopped to check on him. I got a good feeling from helping in whatever way I could and affirming his safety, and that he wasn't alone in it. In perceiving him as myself, I gave to him and to myself. And I was made whole in my giving because in truth we are one. You see, we do not need to put anyone down to feel better about ourselves. I do not need to compare myself to anyone to feel better about myself. Indulgence in any thought that you are less wealthy, less intelligent, or less beautiful than anyone else chips away at your perceived humanity. Have none of it. Please be you. The world needs every one of us. Have you heard the saying, comparison is the thief of joy? Yes. That saying has been attributed to multiple writers, and I am here to tell you that it is so. I have learned to compete only with myself, because only I know where I've been and where I want to go. So I use that as the basis of my self-assessment. Our happiest and most fulfilling moments have nothing to do with comparisons. In fact, they have everything to do with being fully present in this moment and perceiving the mutuality in one another. I would want someone to stop to help me if my car got stuck in the road. The fact of the matter is that giving and receiving are one. And this doesn't apply solely to giving material goods and money. This also applies to our actions and thoughts. If I take actions to attempt to make another person feel less than or judge someone as being undeserving of help, I condemn myself. And this wisdom is offered by many religions, as Houston Smith attests in his book, The World's Religions. Judge not, lest you be judged. We must see each other as worthy of respect, consideration, and care, worthy of forgiveness and compassion, inherently worthy of each of these. Several years ago, a friend from work invited me to her church, which was Baptist. I went because I've always been that person. In school, I was never the person to go and sit with everyone who was like me. I was always that person who was sort of hanging out with everyone else, whoever the other people were. I went because I've always been open and curious about how different faith traditions express themselves. I heard the minister say, you can't do it by yourself. And I didn't like it then when I heard that. Something about it felt like the minister was handing me a crutch, and it felt like a trap. I'd always sort of felt like God was in me. So what do you mean I can't do it by myself? But now when I think about that statement, you can't do it by yourself, it lands differently. I know now that we need each other to get where we're going. We need a community to transform one another through love. If we are feeling unworthy of love, you've made errors in a relationship, unworthy of trust, you have betrayed someone or have let someone down, unworthy of friendship, unworthy of forgiveness, unworthy of peace or rest, unworthy of respect, if you feel unworthy about anything, I encourage you to challenge that thought. Give that loveless thought some attention. I encourage you to dig it up out of the earth of your unconscious mind where it has been rooted and hold it up to the light of love for transformation. When I find a loveless thought, I hold it up to God and ask for its transformation in my mind. I ask God to transform my perception of unworthiness into the peaceful acceptance of my inherent worth. This is a very intimate request. One in which I acknowledge what I feel I am lacking and ask for this thought to be healed. So if you feel it's missing, I encourage you to claim your worthiness, to invite it fully into the light of your awareness. And my wish for you is that your awareness of your worthiness settles into your mind and heart and body and goes with you into all your interactions in the world. May you have the courage to apply it with peaceful confidence as you forge new relationships or seek to heal old ones or set boundaries where they are needed or cultivate new respect for yourself. If you are willing, there are three statements I'd like us to say together, and I will demonstrate them first. The first is, I believe in your inherent worth and dignity. The second, there is no one above you and no one below you. And the third is, I see myself reflected in you. I'd like us to practice this with someone near you, if you can, preferably someone you didn't travel here with. So one person will start, they will say the three statements, which I will lead you through, while the other receives them, speaking after me, and then you will switch. And the other person will do the same. So repeat after me. Have you identified the person? Is there a person? Person? All right. Okay, so here we go. Have you identified who's going first? Okay. All right. You ready? I believe in your inherent worth and dignity. There is no one above you and no one below you. I see myself reflected in you. All right, now the other person's turn. I believe in your inherent worth and dignity. There is no one above you and no one below you. I see myself reflected in you. How did that feel? So, I will let you in on a secret. That is heaven. Not the hereafter, not after we die. Heaven, according to the Course in Miracles, is in this holy instant, in any moment in which we perceive our oneness with another person, and in which we experience our mutuality. That is heaven. Human, in your congregation, in your exploration of this first principle, are cultivating heaven with each other. It is a tremendous gift. And with that, I am complete. Thank you.
And now let us extinguish our chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again.
As you go forth today and in the coming days, may you thrive in the experience of your inherent worth. May you share it in the world by witnessing it in the eyes of each person you meet, and may peace be with you.
The Unitarian Universalist Metro Atlanta North Congregation of Roswell, Georgia, thanks you for listening to the Human Podcast. Background music, courtesy of Tim Moore from Pixabay.